All right, thank you so much, panelists. Thank you, APHA, and on behalf of New York City Health and Hospitals, Dr. Ram Raju, thank you for having me, Camilla Mortizazadeh, here to speak to you about class nod policies. I'm also joined here with Mathilde Roman, who is our Senior Director for the class office, and I'm delighted to speak to you about how we are working on implementing both class and health equity initiatives in our public hospital system. So, no disclosures, no relationships to disclose, rather. Just to give you an overview of what I'm going to do today, I'll give you an overview of New York City Health and Hospitals. I'll lay out the process of how we began in developing our plan to enhance equitable care across our systems, and how we describe strategies and initiatives to advance health equity, and finally give a little bit of some tidbits on some lessons learned. So, have many of you heard of NYC Health and Hospitals? Okay, a few in the room. Have you heard of Bellevue Hospital by any chance? Okay, so Bellevue Hospital is one of, this is just a map of all the hospitals that are comprised of New York City Health and Hospitals. The blue are the actual hospitals. We have over 70 community health centers, 6 ambulatory care clinics, and in the bottom are all the names. We have several long-term care facilities as well. Bellevue is sort of the hospital that I think most people think of when they think of New York City Health and Hospitals. It is our flagship. It is the oldest public hospital in the country. Just to give a little bit about HHC, I'm going to call it HHC as an acronym. It was our former acronym. We, as I mentioned, we are the largest municipal healthcare delivery system in the country, actually. We are the safety net for New York City. We provide care to over 450,000 patients who are uninsured and ineligible for Medicaid as well. We have over 6,700 staff beds. Over one-third of all the ER visits in New York City come from our hospitals. And also we're a very, large organization as well. We have over 42,000 employees, and we serve over 1.2 New Yorkers annually. So about approximately 1 out of every 6 New Yorkers receives care at New York City Health and Hospitals. We also have a lot of specialty clinics, and I won't go into this too much, but at various hospitals within our system, Harlem Hospital, Jacoby, there are very distinct programs that are catered to the communities that are there and have those needs. So for example, we have Medina Clinic in Harlem, which caters specifically to the West African Muslim community that is in Harlem, and some other clinics as well. This is just some more background about HHC. You might know Dr. Ram Raju. He was the former CEO of Cook County. He is now at NYC Health and Hospitals, who returned, rather. That's just an example of one of our Guns Down, Life Up. It's modeled after the Cure Violence Initiative that started here in Chicago. You may have heard of Dr. Craig Spencer. He was the first confirmed Ebola patient. And if you haven't heard of HHC by now, Jimmy Fallon recently had his finger shaved at Bellevue. So that was our little claim to fame. So just to give you a sense. What I will spend some time talking about a little bit is about our demographics, and it's really one of the things that makes New York City Health and Hospitals so unique. Nearly 1 out of every 3 patients that we serve is limited English proficient, meaning that they will request a language other than English, and they may speak another language other than English, but that is sort of our patients that we have and who we're dealing with. To bridge these gaps, we provide over 11 million minutes of interpretation services in over 188 languages and dialects. And I say dialects because we have a lot of West African dialects that come up, and so we are constantly trying to sort of meet these needs 24/7. This is just a flavor of some of the top 10 requested languages, aside from English, at health and hospitals. To go beyond just thinking about language needs, over 70,000 of our patients have some form of hearing loss. We have a lot of patients that are blind or visually impaired, and we've also been sort of tasked to think through how we meet their needs as well. As I mentioned before, 40% of our patients are foreign-born from over 170 countries. That's also just a flavor of where the patients are coming from. In New York, they very much mirror trends in New York City as well. And just to give a flavor of sort of the payer category, 60% of our patients are Medicaid, 25% self-pay, 20% commercial insurance. And I won't go into a lot about New York City, but New York City, as you all know, is one of the most diverse places. It is truly, you can meet people from all over, any country across the globe. We also have the largest LGBT community in size. A little interesting fact, too, is that only 34.5% of New Yorkers actually have college degrees, so that poses some challenges as we think about health literacy and meaning needs for chronic disease management and all sorts of other things we talked about today. And still 13.5% of our population remains uninsured. So Well, we kind of, we're constantly looking at this data and thinking in our office, or what are sort of, I don't want to say challenges, but growth opportunities for us as we're thinking through some of these factors. The changing diversity that we have means that we do have an increased need for class and specifically tailored services. The healthcare market is becoming more and more competitive. More New Yorkers are insured as a result of the ACA, but now, especially in New York, lots of mergers happening, and people now can sort of decide where they want to go. So we really have to, as a system, not just us, but I think every hospital, is really trying to sort of up the ante in how they're delivering care and thinking about specialized services, making sure that it's more than just language access. It's we actually know who you are. We care about your culture. And we're thinking about that. We, as you also know, it's a much more competitive reimbursement environment. So much of our reimbursement funds are now tied to our CAHPS scores, patient experience, and preventing readmissions and improving health outcomes. And we took on risks with joining the state district program as well. And also, in HHC, there's a lot of organizational changes that are happening. Dr. Ramraju has been there about a little bit over, more than a year and a half now, I believe. And so we've been really thinking as an organization how we should sort of transform and remain not just competitive, but really the provider of choice for many of the New Yorkers that we have served, some of which, their parents have been coming to our hospitals and facilities and their grandparents, and we want to sort of keep that relationship. So we kind of took a step back and really kind of thought about, okay, so we have a lot of things that are going on. There's a lot of new initiatives, new change. Where does health equity fit into all this? Where does class fit into all this? And how do we tie this to the work that we're doing? Some key guideposts, I want to say, that informed a lot of our thought as we put together a steering committee. We're thinking about AHA's equity of care goals that are sort of, a lot of hospitals have pledged to move forward. National class standards, AEH principles on equities of care. We also did an internal staff survey, of thinking about what equity means to our staff. How do you define equity, and how you define it matters. And also one other thing that's very interesting, Dr. Ramraju last April released this ambitious 2020 vision, and it's a series of goals, the five of which are listed there below, but first and foremost, thinking about the patient experience and what are we doing to ensure that the patients come first in every single thing we do. It's a key piece of our guiding principles, which is the circle you see to the left. But how are we tying this to all the sort of cascading goals, be it workforce, access, market share, financial viability, and really the patient being at the center of all of our efforts? So our goal in thinking through how we came to this strategic planning process was to develop a long-term organizational strategy to enhance and embed equity principles, promote cultural and linguistic competence throughout the organization. And we went through a series of steps, probably beginning around late summer, fall of last year, thinking about a corporate-wide site assessment of all of our facilities and sort of thinking, what are the gaps, what are the strengths that people are doing, what are best practices, not just here, but other jurisdictions as well. And given that we know we do have unique challenges, we are very large, we do have very unique diversity that I think is sort of unparalleled, at least we haven't seen thus far, in thinking through this. So all of this work really culminated through several, I'm not going to talk through all these processes, but to think through what came to be our inaugural Health Equity Symposium, which we had last May. And it was a really exciting thing. It was the first time we had this sort of convening of thought leaders, over 95 staff across our agency with designees, stakeholders. And they came together for a full day. They were not allowed to leave. six critical sort of health equity areas that they could kind of go to and be in a work group in. And these are the sort of six areas that we identified based on a lot of research and discussions, thinking about patient experience and engagement, workforce strategy, health literacy, both internal and external communications, governance of race, ethnicity, and language data. This is a big one for us. And governance and leadership broadly for our system. And we had everyone sort of in these groups thinking about very specific goals, deliverables, objectives, and strategies, and thinking about how we can sort of embed health equity and class into all these work groups. So what culminated was our 3 to 5 year plan. I have copies if anyone's interested. I have a couple that you can kind of preview. And what evolved was sort of this five-pronged sort of framework, thinking about what we need to do in our strategy for the next 3 to 5 years to really embed health equity in sort of everything that we're thinking of. I won't go through all these, but just to give a broad overview, it was thinking about how we are assessing ourselves as an organization, again, looking at governance of real data very explicitly, because we know that we need good data to look at outcomes and to do a lot more work. Thinking about our organizational capacity of our workforce through training, education, staff and community engagement, and this is broad, both engagement within our 42,000 staff, but also beyond to the communities that we serve, and standardization of policies and practices. This is a big piece of how we think about the work that we're doing. We are sort of in a mode of centralization across our system, and as you can imagine, with a system this large, that is a challenge. But thinking about how we standardize some of our practices that relate to sort of areas of concern for health equity or looking at disparities in class is a priority for us as well. And this is just to give you an example of what our roadmap looks like. And we kind of really had these really kind of large expanded grids of what our goals are, why we feel this is important, and how it aligns to Dr. Rajiv's 2020 priorities, and very specific activities, objectives, deliverables, and timeframes, and key piece also responsibility. Just to give you an example of some of the work that we've begun and are planning in sort of our year one. We're thinking through a lot of, we have an indicator measuring the completeness of our race, ethnicity, and language data in our patient records. Our goal is to have 93% of our records by 2020, having all those fields complete. We're thinking about more of our sort of learning opportunities, both for real data collection, language access, cultural diversity. Thank you. We're thinking more also about how we standardize some of our language access policies and procedures. Recently, we had to sort of think about standardization for how we meet the needs of patients who are blind and visually impaired. And then the last thing is really sort of, and I'd like to talk a little bit about this, is staff and community engagement. And we've been doing a lot of really exciting work, and I'm really excited to show you an example of this. But thinking about how we not only celebrate what I think is one of our biggest assets at Health and Hospitals is our staff. We have staff that literally, they look like the patients they serve, they live in the communities that they serve too, so it really is a very sort of unique experience to come to a hospital in our system. There are generations that have come to these hospitals. And so what we try to do is not only celebrate the diversity of our staff, but think about how we also challenge everyone to sort of check their assumptions. And when we think about, for example, the importance of self-identification, and when you ask a patient, you know, what is your race, what is your ethnicity, and making sure that we make sure people actually self-identify in a way. So we launched this interesting campaign, and I'll show you the video at the end. It was called Uncovered, and we took real staff these are all staff that actually work at our facilities, and we had them sort of, you know, we had this exhibit where it had their faces, and we sort of said, okay, if you just looked at her, what would you think they are, or what would you think she is? And people would make assumptions, people would say things, and they'd throw things, and this is exactly what we want to be stopping. This is two of our staff. This is Dr. Hina Faruqi and Priscilla Swan, both ones at Kings County, ones at Harlem Hospital. And they also told these very personal stories of who they are and how people make assumptions about them, and how, you know, they're also trying to sort of be change agents in our organization. So this is just more of our staff. And frankly, even for us, the answers that we got were truly fascinating. It was a great exhibit. It didn't take too much time to do, but we're repurposing this for, you know, e-learnings, for diversity months, and lots of different things. But it's our real staff, and it's training on people that, you know, who we really are. So just to quickly go through before I show you the video, you know, one thing we've really taken away is how important it is to embed equity principles. You know, we have a lot of things going on. There's always a new priority at Health and Hospitals. This is something that is going to help us achieve all our other goals. And really, when we think about class, a lot of it for us is making the business case and how this is about customer service. If we want to be competitive, if we want to meet all these needs, this is just our bread and butter. It's what we do and what we need to even do better. And so that's been sort of the key takeaway I think we've tried to reinforce. It's an evolving process. We've had multiple iterations of our plan and probably will. And as I mentioned before, the key point is aligning into what we do and remembering that at the end of the day, patients are at the center of everything we do. So I will show you a quick video just to give you a flavor of New York City Health and Hospitals. This is also our, it is 1 minute. Here we go. All right.
My name is Fadi Gamudin.
Half Iranian and part African, Filipino. talking about the same diversity that's reflected in agency so that we can have quality care in a culturally competent and compassionate manner.
I know that the South American culture, they are very expressive, they speak with their hands, and in very eye contact, you know, you approach a little differently than, you know, you approach.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Not sure why that happened.
Asian culture, you know.
Okay.
So having that competency, cultural competency, I think it helps to build a trust to the patient, you know, to trust you with their care.
Sorry, it's buffering.
We had a patient from Africa that couldn't speak any of the, she doesn't speak English, and the family member wasn't around. So lucky enough, I was in the team of resident during the rounds. They told me where she was from, so I could understand. I could speak the language that she spoke. So I became like a translator within the physician and the patient.
As the largest public hospital network in the country, in one of the largest cities in the country, that's also one of the most diverse cities in the country, HHC staff needs representative patients that we're treating. And if we want to be able to provide culturally competent care to every patient that walks through the door, then it's more important, even more important, that all of our, you know, the diversity among our staff is reflective of the patients that we're working with.
I'll just stop it there, but essentially this was something that, you know, it was very much our own staff in their own words telling us how they identify and why it's so important to think about culturally linguistically appropriate services. So thank you so much. I'll be around for questions and I appreciate you taking the time to learn about open hospitals.